We're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a full-time development director. This position leads all fundraising campaigns in alignment with KBOO's mission, goals, and policies. The development director works closely with management and staff to identify funding priorities and create major donor campaigns, capital campaigns, and grant writing. More info can be found at kboo.fm/hiring. We will begin reviewing applications on August 7th, and the position will remain open until filled. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
Hello, everyone. My name is TK Kapura, and I'm your host this evening. If you just joined us, thank you for listening and welcome. You're listening to Global Cell Show on KBOO Portland. Before we dive into our interview, I want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you're enjoying the program, please show your support by making a contribution today, or better yet, become a monthly sustaining member. Just go to kboo.fm/give or simply text KBOO to 44-321. Tonight, we take you to the Middle East. As most of us know, immigrants and refugees come from any spot in the world, and immigration remains a hot topic as it touches millions of people, friends, neighbors, family, and the world at large, since we're all global citizens, just facing displacements once in a while because of certain issues that affect us, that cause us to leave and run away from home. This evening, our special guest, Nasrullah John Safi from Afghanistan, is here with us. He's now based in Salem, Oregon, and I'll give him space to introduce himself. Nasrullah, please, can you introduce yourself to the audience?
TK, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. As you said, my name is Nasrullah. I also go by John. I'm from Afghanistan, and I live in Salem, Oregon.
Thank you, Nasrullah. It's so good to have you here. Just like me, I also live in Salem, Oregon, and now we are both immigrants, and we share common paths. We have a shared common experience of leaving our home countries to be here in the USA. For those just joining us this evening, we want to tour Afghanistan today on this Global Cell Show, and we want to understand the situation and the culture in Afghanistan. Our guest, Nasrullah John Safi, will shed some light on what he knows and understands about the Afghan-based cultures, and is based on also his lived experience. So for warm up, we'll start with a song that's one of the most popular songs in Afghanistan. Nasrullah is going to introduce the song to you guys.
This song is by Ustad Nashnaz, one of my favorite songs, and it's a very popular song in Afghanistan. It's quite old song, but it's old. It feels new, and lots of people are still listening to it. So it's a song by Ustad Nashnaz.
What does this song resemble?
This song is about Afghanistan, and in some ways it talks about the hardships and in the life, in the culture, and in the social life of people in Afghanistan.
Oh, thank you, Nasrullah. Now we'll move on to listen to the song. Okay. We hope you bear with us as we move on with our interview. This evening, we want to hear more about Afghanistan. We want to talk about the culture, the people, their thoughts and feelings, and everything. We want to walk in the communities and on the streets in Afghanistan. We need to feel the social temperature so we can understand what makes Afghanistan unique or special as a country. We want to understand the way Afghans look like and how they look at life. What is the idea of life like? We want to be invited to their current issues for informed understanding and empathy. We also want to visit their spaces of comfort and common ground. We want to experience their food, their music, their thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. In the studio tonight, we feel honored to have Nasrullah Safi from Afghanistan. We have a deep conversation with him as he shares his life experiences. Nasrullah, would you please tell our audience where Afghanistan is and the nations that border Afghanistan?
Yes, that's a good question. I'm sure a lot of people knows where Afghanistan is. The thing that is in the Middle East. So Afghanistan is located at the crossroad as connected Iran, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Pakistan. They also call it like the heart of Asia, Qalbi Asia, or the Asia Zara in our languages, in Persian and in Pashto. It's located in the heart of Asia, bordering with Iran, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Pakistan, and also with China.
Oh, great. And do we have a war? Is there a war in Afghanistan right now?
Well, the US troop just withdrew from Afghanistan back in August of 2021. Mm-hmm. And the Taliban came back to power. There is some war in some part of the country, but people don't feel themselves in peace or in peaceful environment right now. Even though the Taliban's are back in power, but a lot of people are scared and they're afraid to step outside their houses. So you don't feel peace in the country.
What is the Taliban fighting for?
So they used to fight the Americans while the Americans were there, and they said, like, you know, we're fighting the Americans because they had invaded our country. But now they're in the country, but there are other groups such as ISIS or ISKP, mm-hmm. that they're fighting the Taliban right now, and their explosions and their killings in different parts of the country. And the war is going on for a while there. So, I mean, you can't really understand what is this war is all about. But the Taliban fought the Americans and the Afghan forces for 20 plus years. Now the Americans are gone, the Americans are left. But they're still fighting. There's still explosions. There's still killing. There are still various conflicts in various parts of the country.
Oh, thank you. And from public commentary, a lot of people get interested in how the Taliban could be working in countries like Afghanistan. Many people wonder, like, who sponsors them to supply them with such advanced ammunition? Who sponsors them?
You know, that's one of the biggest questions a lot of people ask, and this is one of the biggest questions being asked in the last 20 plus years, that where those supports are coming from, whether it's military support, whether it's financial support. There are countries that they're supporting, or they were supporting the Taliban, and there are some regional powers that they have been involved in this war, and they've been supporting the Taliban. And it also goes back to back in the 70s when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, and it was clear that who were so-called Mujahideen or the Holy Fighters supported to fight against the Russians. As they did, and it made the Russians to flee the country, to withdraw the country. So the support was coming from neighboring countries and some other regional big countries that they were involved in this war for the last 20 plus years, because they wanted to support the Taliban somehow to fight the Americans. Because the Taliban's, or the term Talib means students, especially used for individuals who had gone to religious school, or what we call it madrasa, or who are still going to madrasa where they study Islamic classes or taking Islamic classes or learning about their own faith or religion. So how is it possible that, you know, to fight without any regional or international support? with big countries.
So does the Taliban have established camps or cities that they've raided and conquered, or they just do underground movements?
It was basically underground movement, and the propaganda was huge for them. There are some videos that they made show that they were controlling some part of the country, and they were out in public supporting, you know, people, providing services, but they were not. But it was mostly underground operations or missions that they were doing.
Mm-hmm. And do they have a lot of support among the populations?
No. They do not, and they did not. They never had public supports they did have a little bit. There were some sympathizers, some people who had some sort of sympathy with the Taliban, and especially those are the populations lives in the rural country. They did have some sort of sympathy for the Taliban and did support the Taliban, just under the name of religion or their faith. You know, like we're carrying what we call it the jihad or the fight against infidels. So you got to support us, because if you support us, somehow you're supporting the war against infidels, and there would be reward after we die. So there was some, you know, people were manipulated or brainwashed, and somehow they were supported the Taliban.
Mm-hmm. So when we look at Afghanistan as a stranger from afar, just hearing about Afghanistan, is this war against the Taliban ongoing, or is it random, or is it consistent? Does it disturb the real life situation? What's the situation like?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not. It disturbs daily lives, and it makes it very complicated for their citizens, for the country, for its citizens to carry out their day-to-day lives. And there's not a major war right now. There's not a major conflict taking place right now in the country, because the Taliban just came back to power, and after the U.S. troops withdraw back in August of 2021, they came back to power after 20 some years. And there's not a major conflict going on, but there's some fighting in some parts of the country, especially in northern Afghanistan. And it seems like it's going to increase. It may spread out to other parts of the country as well.
Mm-hmm. That's quite interesting. We're going to take a chance and try to play one of the music songs. It's called, go ahead, Nasrullah, and introduce this song, please.
This song is by Ostaz Nashnas. You can ask anybody in Afghanistan, and they will tell you who is Ostaz Nashnas is. It's an old song, but people still listen to it. And for me, growing up, my father used to listen to him a lot, and his song was on the radio all the time. So he's a very famous singer, and everybody loves his music. So this is a quite beautiful song, and I used to listen to it all the time.
Thank you, Nasrullah.
Daim kan nista chipur de bazar babya yaradam daim kan nista chipur de bazar babya yaradam kaje pasmina fulgi mortram sababya yaradam kaje pasmina fulgi mortram sababya For hush bakar lagla ya razam apal me ladi chi for hush bakar lagla ya razam daim khan sta chi for de bazar bakra ya razam kaje pas bina phul pe mor sabha
Thank you.
Palau pradai mina prizdi vali sahara masham lakai tim sahar shadali masham ya razam lakai tim sahar shadali masham ya razam daim khan stachi purde bazar bakha ya razam kati pasvina kulbi mortal sabaya
That was a beautiful song from Afghanistan.
It was a beautiful song, and it kind of reminded my childhood while I was listening to this song with my father. It was quite emotional because I haven't seen my father for a long time, and it kind of brought the memory back while he was listening to this music, and with the kids around him.
Oh. So you haven't seen your father in a long time because of the relocation after you moved over to the USA?
Yes.
Okay, great. So sorry to hear that. Right. For those just joining us, you're listening to the Global Cell Show. Today we are touring Afghanistan, and we have Nasrullah Safi to tell us more about the Afghan experience. So we're moving on, Nasrullah. So what do you think is the way forward between the government and the Taliban forces? Do you see an end to this crisis?
Well, so there's no longer an Afghan government in the country. As I said, the Afghan government, which was a democratic government, collapsed right after the US troops withdraw or pull out of Afghanistan back in August of 2021, and the Taliban returned to power after 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. And but there are a lot of elements that they're not getting along with the Taliban, and the United States, including the international community, are asking the Taliban to form an inclusive government where everybody can feel themselves and feel part of the government. But as far as we see, and as far as we're hearing and watching the Taliban, the whole regime, the body, the government's body, and everything, pretty much controlled and run by the Taliban, by people who went to religious school or madrasa, and they don't even know how to run a government, and that create lots of problems for ordinary Afghans, people who have degrees, who went to universities, are unemployed, and there's no job availability for them because you have to have some sort of connections with the Taliban, or you have to know somebody in order to get some sort of work or job with the Taliban. So it's pretty chaotic, and there are some groups that are fighting against the Taliban right now, and the previous government, as I said, is collapsed, and people fled the country, and over 100,000 were able to make it to the United States, and thousands and thousands ended up going to different countries.
Thank you for that explanation. Just because the U.S. troops left Afghanistan, an ordinary person not knowing much about Afghanistan would assume maybe the Americans left, so maybe the war is over. Now I'm realizing still the Taliban is still fighting against other groups that are still existing in Afghanistan. So do they have like special interest groups that they have to make enemies, or they just do random fights against ordinary groups?
Well, so if you go back to the 1990s when the Taliban came to power for the very first time, when they took over the government or the country, we thought they would bring peace, but they did not bring peace with them. It is the same thing right now. You know, when they came back to power after 20 years, everybody thought that they would bring peace, but they did not bring peace because they're still fighting, and especially the ISIS or the ISKP, the Islamic State of Khorasan province, or, you know, there's explosions, some high professionals or high government officials of the Taliban regime were targeted by those elements, by those groups. And there's no peace in the country. So there's just not one group. There's multiple groups that they're fighting. The Northern Alliance group that they're also fighting the Taliban. And like I said before, it seems like there's going to be more and more because people are not happy with the Taliban and the things that they're doing. So they're very brutal against their own people.
That's very interesting. And I would also follow up and ask, so on the neighboring states, are there any interested neighboring states who could sponsor the Taliban or try to bring peace to Afghanistan besides the U.S. having tried to help and then withdrawing later?
So in the last 20 years, it was a common mindset with every Afghan, and you can still ask any Afghan there that who were supporting the Taliban, and they were quite clear about that Pakistan is the major supporter or the biggest supporter of the Taliban. And everybody could have told you this before, and if you can ask, anybody now, and they will tell you the same thing. And there was hope that, you know, that they supported the Taliban, and they said if the Taliban returned to power, there would be peace. But there's no peace with the Taliban, even though they're in power. Just yesterday, there was an explosion, I believe it was a suicide bomb in Pakistan, and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa killed about 50 people. And now the question is, like, you guys were rooting for the Taliban to return to power. You were the one, you know, supporting the Taliban. But now they're in power, but the fight did not stop, and the fight continued. And it's a lot of innocent people losing their lives. And the explosion that happened in one of the gatherings for one of the religious leaders who legitimized the war or jihad against the Americans, against the Afghans in the last 20 years. There's a video interview of him available on YouTube. You can watch it, that he was asked, like, do you legitimize, do you agree? He says, I 100% agree with what the Taliban do. They kill innocent people, and they have the right to do that. And the gathering that he held just yesterday, there was an explosion, and it killed about 50 people. And now people asking, like, you were supporting the Taliban. Now they're in power, but the fight's still going.
That's really sad. So does the Taliban have, like, a structured force, or it's just random joining and leaving and so forth, in and out?
Well, like I said, propaganda is a huge part of their regime right now. You would see some videos that they demarcate for their forces, but they're unofficial forces. There is not an official uniform, unlike the Afghan government before in the last 20 years. So you will see some folks like wearing uniforms, but uniform don't make you a professional soldier if you don't understand the law, or if you don't understand anything about the regime, about the government, about different departments, about the different parts of the government or the bodies of the government. I will say no, there's not any military forces that like official military forces that they have right now.
Wow, that's quite interesting as well. So which means this Taliban force operates in casual clothes, I would say?
Yes, yes.
And they do not have established leadership. Am I right?
They do have established leadership. They do have, like, their prime ministers. They have their supreme leader that nobody have seen him yet. And they have been in power for 2+ some years. And and nobody have ever seen their supreme leader. And they do have their chain of commands, their leaders, but they don't have an official forces, you know.
And in that situation, how does the Taliban situation affect the school system and the jobs? Because I imagine this war is going on every day. Some people are leaving the country and all that. How is the situation regarding kids going to school or people going to work? How are people surviving?
You know, that's a very good question. So they already banned girls from going to school, from learning. They banned women from working. And recently, just last week, they banned women from going to salons and, you know, from those places where they get their nails done or like their tooth and stuff like that. So they banned pretty much the cut women out of the government. So women cannot leave the house. And it was the same thing that happened back in 1996 when they came to power at the very beginning. So it's very brutal for the woman right now. But for people, you know, a lot of people struggle. There are starvations and there is some status from the United Nations that, you know, there's some percentage that I don't remember right now that people will face extreme starvations in a winter because a lot of people won't have enough food to survive or eat. So it's very hard. And when it comes to creating jobs, those folks don't know how to create jobs because you go to madrasa, a religious school, and you study about religion. So when you finish, when you're done with your schooling, you're becoming a mullah or a preacher. So that have nothing to do with economy. Mm-hmm. And now in the government, in their regime, everybody's mullah or talib. So the people who went to a religious school. So they have no clue about running a country or a government or a regime.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so do you see this war coming to an end soon or anytime?
Well, I hope it does because Afghans have been tired of war. You know, there's been war for the last four decades and even more than four decades. And nobody wants war. People have been traumatized so bad and impacted by war so bad. But there's not a clear sign that the war will come to an end because what people wanted and what the international community want from the Taliban, they don't listen and they don't want to do that. One of the things that the international community want from the Taliban says, like, now you guys are in power, you guys running the government, why don't you guys create an inclusive government or form an inclusive government where every citizen of the country can feel themselves and confine themselves and can feel comfortable. But it seems like they're not doing that. And it says, well, we force Americans to leave the country and we're the winner. So we deserve to be whatever we want it to be. And we deserve to run the government the way we want it and won't listen to anybody. And that's why their government is not recognized by any country in the world.
Oh, that's so sad. So with the current war situation in Afghanistan, the Taliban causing a lot of mayhem and trouble in Afghanistan, what is your special message to the listeners, to the American listeners?
There's so many messages. The Afghans, not what we see on TV channels. You know, Afghanistan is not, and it wasn't in the last 20 years. It was one of the most beautiful countries, and it still is. Mm-hmm. But there is no peace. You know, people may think about what Afghans look like, you know, from what they see on TV, but that's not who the Afghans are or people from that country. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of Afghans settled here in Portland in the Greater Salem area. The Afghans are very hospitable, and you can go to their house and they will serve you food and they will serve you tea and they will welcome you with their heart and they will warmly welcome you to their house. And so if there's peace, this could be one of the most beautiful places where a lot of people would go visit as a tourist.
That's awesome. So back to the music. We want to play another song from Afghanistan. What's the name of this song, Nasrullah?
This song is by Ustad Biltun, and it's called Jardishim Jar. So it's a very good song too. It's a very classic song, but it doesn't feel like classic. Everybody listens to it, and you know, it doesn't matter how old the song gets, it still feels a new song. And it's by Ustad Biltun. He's one of the most famous singers in the country. He passed away, but his songs are living with us, and people listen to his music. And it's one of my father's favorite too. He used to listen to him too.
Oh, great. Thank you.
شمرا شدوارا قندار تزو ده بابا ولی زیارت تشا مزار تزو ماز دیگر کشا مقصد قدر بار تزو جار دشم جار جار دشم جار و گرمی که تاری زلف سایه دار چتنوی رقیبانو بخندل راتا دشمنان پارزای کی بدکتل راتا غمازان پارزای کی غاخچ چل راتا جار دشم جار جار دشم جار و مجلس کی بدی و باس مرمار شکر باستا دی رفتار یاره رنگا رنگ گلو نکه ده پرخسار یاره ستا دیدن که همیشه یا انتظار یاره جار دشم جار یار دشم جار چرشتیا پتا مای نبلا یار
That was a beautiful song from Afghanistan. It's called...
It was by Ustad Biltun, Jar Dishim Jar. It was a great song.
Oh, thank you. For those just joining us, this is the Global Cell Show, and my name is TK Kapuram, your host. Tonight we are listening to Nasrullah Safai from Afghanistan. He's going to be sharing with us his Afghan experiences as he grew up in Afghanistan. So we continue with our conversation, Nasrullah. Would you please share a little bit about the ordinary life in Afghanistan today? If I were to go there this morning, fly into the capital city, what would the life be like?
Well, that's a very good question. And I mean, a lot of people ask me, like, what lives look like. And that could be one of the challenges for our new neighbors, for our new refugees coming from Afghanistan. Life is quite simple there. Unlike here, like, you know, at 7 o'clock or 6, you have to be out of the bed. Like, oh, I got to get away to go to work because, you know, I have to pay bills. And there are, like, rent or other utilities. But Afghanistan life is quite simple. Like simple, and it's pretty cheap too. I mean, you don't have to worry about a lot of things, and life is quite social. You know everybody in the village where you live, or you know everybody in town where you live. And if you leave your house at 7 and you will see other friends in the village, and they will ask you for breakfast if you didn't have it, or if you have time, they will invite you to, you know, breakfast, or if it's lunchtime, they will invite you to lunch. Like I said, you know, it depends where you live in the country. People are, you know, a lot of people are farmers. If you go to rural part of the country, you know, that's where, you know, a lot of people are busy farming. If you go to big cities, people are having different smaller and bigger businesses, stores, shops. That's what people do. Taxis, and it depends what part of the country you live. But if I put it into one word, I would say it's quite simple. So you leave your house, and if you're a farmer, you go to your farming, your farm, and you know, it's physical. You know, it's handy. We don't have machines, and a lot of farmers don't have machines, so they use their hands and do pretty much everything with their hands.
And what are they farming mainly?
Like wheat, rice, corn. Sugarcane. I don't know if you like sugarcane in some places, mm-hmm. and other vegetables too, like cucumber, cauliflower, mm-hmm. Cabbage. Now I heard about strawberries too, mm-hmm. That kind of stuff.
So that's a very interesting thing, because while all this is happening behind the scenes, the Taliban is also doing their own thing. Do they interrupt farmers?
They do. And that's I'm glad you asked that. Mm-hmm. Every year or after every season, they ask for what they call it zakat, mm-hmm. or like you have to make donation to the Taliban. If you don't, you can get in trouble. Like that's how they run their regime right now. So you have to make donations, otherwise you can go to jail. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, I heard something recently that some people died for not making those donations to the Taliban out of their wealth. And they says, if you don't, you're going to get in trouble. And they did.
Oh, that's so scary. So besides farming, does the working class people go to work in the ordinary day and finish up the work and then get paid month end or weekend when they work?
Like if you work for the government or if you work for any organization, so you get paid by salary. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, if you just work for somebody else or if you do like, you know, work for a company or something, so you work by day, not mm-hmm. by hour. So you work 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours or 9 hours. So mm-hmm. there is a fixed rate for you. For example, I will say $2 or $3. That's how much you make. Mm-hmm. It's not hourly. Mm-hmm. So you go to work, you know, help somebody for a day, and then that's how you get paid. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do people normally do for fun, like, say, Saturday night? What are people doing?
So, like I say, it's a very diverse community. It's very social. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, they go out, have picnic with their friends and mm-hmm. inviting their friends over to their houses or inviting their friends or family or other relatives for tea. That's what, like, you know, the main thing, they like for tea parties. And we also, you know, like do sports, for example, cricket. It depends what part of the country you're from. So if you go to northeastern Afghanistan, that's where a lot of people play cricket. And you will find lots of kids play cricket in the streets. Soccer is too. A lot of people play soccer in other sports too.
Mm-hmm. So to a tourist trying to go to Afghanistan today, would they be so worried about gunshot sounds once they leave the airport? Or is just an ordinary place where you can just walk freely as a tourist and be able still to come back alive and comfortable?
Well, I don't think they will hear gunshots, but there's a possibility those people may get kidnapped. And, you know, they have to have escort with them. I was watching something 2 weeks ago mm-hmm. that Great Britain, one of the parliament members, ended up going to Afghanistan. He was able to visit a bunch of places, and then he created a video or made a video like, oh, this is a peaceful country, and he was inviting everybody. And then there was a lot of criticism against him for making that video because mm-hmm. the Taliban used that as a propaganda tool. So it's like, oh, this is peaceful, and they were inviting more people, more visitors, more tourists to the country. I don't think there would be. I mean, it depends what part of the country you're going to visit. Mm-hmm. But for some folks, I don't think it would be safe right now mm-hmm. just because of different elements operating in the country. And there's a possibility, you know, things can happen and may happen to them.
Oh, wow. So when you look at the economy in Afghanistan, would you say it's a stable country or it's a poor country, based on what's happening, farming, and any other related activities?
Well, economy-wise, good question. I don't think it's a stable country right now, because people who are in power right now have no clue about economy and have no clue about creating jobs for their citizens, people. And people who know how to create jobs and help and support economy are unemployed in their home. People who went to different universities and colleges and hold various degrees are home right now, because it's hard for them to find jobs. As I said, you know, have to know somebody or have some sort of relationship with the Taliban in order to get some sort of work or job with them. So the economy, I mean, it's not something I'm saying it, but like with the different statistics, the economy is not stable. And they're saying that the coming winter probably very harsh for a lot of Afghans, and lots of families won't have enough food to survive. And kids are the main victims of this hardship that's coming.
Wow, that's quite interesting to learn. So in terms of like running water, power supply, for electricity and roads, what's your comment on those items of amenities?
Yeah, that's a very good question. When the U.S. troops intervened back in 2001, the first thing they started doing it was to build roads, and they built lots of roads. They built hospitals, they built clinics, they built schools for kids. And there were a lot of good roads to different, leading to different provinces or parts of the country. But there's no maintenance to those roads, and that those roads are being collapsed and being broken into parts. And that's what's happening. Plus the we have rivers. Where I grew up, there's a famous river. It's called Kuna River. And it's flowing to join the Kabul River. That's another big river. And also we have another famous river, Helmand River or Amu. But sadly, we don't have power system or hydroelectric in our country. We still have a huge problem. Like 90% of the country has no power or no electricity. Or if people do have electricity, they build their own electricity out of solar system. But we don't have like hydro system or hydroelectric in the country.
Oh, thank you, Nasrullah, for that update. We're going to listen to one of the songs again from Afghanistan. This time, the song is called?
This song is by Abdullah Mokri, and the song called Gran Watan Mevranso. So this is the song. It tells the story of the war in our country in the last 20 years. So it's a very famous song, very good song, very emotional song, though.
Oh, great.
ند چا سمر وراونه پخلایم جب خوستا هم پخته ندم خونیک نام بنه زی هم پختونیم دی بدنامی و نیلان دی ناسیم سوک پا مرمی مرسو سوک آلان سو پچڑو باندی گران وطن میوران سو پو شرقی غربی وصلو باندی پچھڑو باندھی گران وطن میوران سو پشرق غربی وسلو باندھی گران وطن میوران سو پشرق غربی وسلو باندھی بدروت تیر شوی وطن ستا بچو باندی گران وطن میوران شو پشرق غربی وسلو باندی گران وطن میوران شو پشرق غربی وسلو باندی سو پمر میں مل سو سو کلام سو پچڑو باندی گران وطن میوران شو پشرق غربی وسلو باندی گران وطن میوران شو پشرق غربی وسلو باندی
That was a beautiful song from Afghanistan. For those just joining us, you are listening to the Global Sales Show. My name is TK Kapoor. With me tonight is Nasrullah Safi from Afghanistan. So we'll continue with our conversation here about the situation in Afghanistan. So tell me something, Nasrullah. What's the source of national wealth in Afghanistan?
The source of national wealth in Afghanistan, so we have a lot of resources in Afghanistan, a lot of minerals, untouched minerals, and for copper, lithium, and the list goes on for gas. None of them are touched just because of the war and the long conflict that's been happening in the country. That's quite popular. And lots of countries try to extract those minerals, but because of the war and because of the conflict, it was very complicated and it was very hard for people to extract those minerals. And there's, you know, huge numbers that, you know, that can make it up to like $1 trillion. If the government or the people of Afghanistan are able to extract those minerals or resources.
That's quite interesting. So we're going to switch gears a little bit. I will kindly ask you to share your personal life history with our audience. You also describe how you got here and what your experiences have been like living in America.
Well, my journey coming to America started back in 2008 when I started working for the American troops as an interpreter. I was an interpreter for more than 7 years for the U.S. troops in Afghanistan. And I wanted to come to the United States. I didn't know much about the United States, but there was a program, they call it Special Immigrant Visa Program. And if anyone worked for 1 year, become eligible for special immigrant visa program. So anyway, it's a long story, but long story short, I was able to make it to the United States back in 2016. I lived on the East Coast for a few years, and at the beginning of 2018, I decided to come out here and visit one of my friends in Oregon. Actually, he lives in Portland. And I didn't know much about Oregon. When I landed here, it was raining, and it was nonstop raining. The next day, the day after, even it took like a whole week, and I couldn't see sun. I was like, where's the sun here? So I'm like, we'll get it one day. And he took me to a few places. He was very smart. And then he changed my mind, and I never went back. I had my round trip ticket. I was planning to go back to the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to stay here. I live in Salem, and that's where I'm going to school. And work for a nonprofit resettlement agency in Salem.
So what are you studying?
It's my dream as well as my mom's and my dad to become a medical doctor. And mm-hmm. I'm hoping to become a medical doctor one day.
Oh, great. So do you have any interesting experiences relocating to America, coming from Afghanistan?
Absolutely. It was hard. Coming to America. I did speak the language, but I didn't know much about the culture. I didn't know much about people. I basically grew up with soldiers, with U.S. military, with U.S. soldiers, and mm-hmm. that was a different military life. But coming here with no knowledge, with very little to none about American culture, it was a challenging at the very beginning. But I slowly used to it, and I never gave up, and I learned, and I knew that those hard days would never last forever, mm-hmm. and that's what I believed. And life got much easier, but it takes time. Mm-hmm. It will take time for folks coming to America. It's a great country. It's a place of opportunity. It's a land of opportunity, mm-hmm. and it's a place where can make your dreams come true.
Oh, great! So, what did you find interesting about the American culture when you got here?
A lot of things. Freedom. I will say freedom. Mm-hmm. like this is you can do whatever you choose to do. Mm-hmm. People won't get offended if do something that is not because it's a very diverse culture here. You can find people from different countries, and you have that freedom to do whatever you want to do, and mm-hmm. you have that freedom to stay in your culture or adopt a different culture here. So that's the interesting things about the cultures here. And nobody will ask you, like, or you can't do this because, this is America. Mm-hmm. You can still wear, your man jam is the one, we wear in Afghanistan. You can put any clothes that you want. You can eat. You can pray. You can do whatever. Nobody will ask you.
Oh, wonderful. So if I were to take you back to Afghanistan, what would make Afghan people feel offended if you were a tourist in Afghanistan? What should you not do so that you don't offend them?
That is a wonderful question, and I'm so glad you asked, TK. Mm. Because we have lots of Afghans living here in Portland, uh-huh. as well as in Greater Salem area. Mm-hmm. So what will make them offend? If you go to their house, or if you see an Afghan, mm-hmm. And they offer you food or they offer you tea,
yeah.
You have to accept it. if you don't, they will get offended. And hospitality is a huge thing in our culture. Mm-hmm. And if you go to their house, or if the Afghan offer you something and says, or if they will serve you food for sure, mm-hmm. Take it. And if you're not hungry, just take it and give it to somebody else. Or if it's, they will serve you with something. That's mm-hmm. just part of our culture. That's what we call it, hospitality, mm-hmm. or mehman nawazi or milma palona. That's mm-hmm. what we do. So they will get offended if you don't take it.
Wow. So I hear you talk about tea a lot. I think you mentioned tea like 4 times in this conversation. What's so special about tea? And do they have also an equivalent of Starbucks serving tea in Afghanistan?
Oh my gosh, tea. What is special about tea? Tea is like a divine, a spiritual medicine for Afghan. They love tea.
Wow.
They will drink tea. Uh-huh. Middle of night, they will drink tea when they wake up, and it doesn't matter how much caffeine it has or how long can it, can keep them up. They will drink tea, so they love tea.
Wow.
They will drink tea with, breakfast, lunch, dinner, in the middle of night. You go to their house, tea, mm-hmm. and some dry fruit is out there waiting for you.
Great. So, do they also drink beer?
No. So based on religion, we are not allowed to drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. Non-alcoholic beer for sure, but some folks will. But no, they don't drink alcohol or beer.
So in Afghanistan, it's a dry zone. There are no sales of beer?
Well, underground, I'm sure there are some black markets where you can find anything. I don't know right now, but you know, in the last, you know, before. But no, not a lot of people knows about beer or alcohol.
So would you be in trouble if you're found in possession of beer?
We're here or in Afghanistan?
In Afghanistan.
Absolutely. You can go to, like, you can, I don't know, I mean, if under the government, you can end up going to jail, or you don't have to go to jail. People will beat the hell out of you. They will beat the hell out of you. It says, like, well, this is not allowed in our religion. Why did he do that? So you are in trouble. So wow. You better not say in front of people.
So how about cigarettes? Do people smoke in Afghanistan?
Yes, they do. And also, just not cigarettes. I'm going to tell you something. We call it like a chew, but it's called Afghan Nusar.
Yeah.
Afghan Nusar. And if you try it, that will make you dizzy. You're not going to be able to walk. That's much stronger than, like, you know, our chew or tobacco products here.
Mm-hmm.
But like Nusar. Cigarette in Nusar. Nusar is something they put under their tongue.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, you can see it, and that's very, very strong.
Oh, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show. It was a very interesting conversation with Nasrullah here from Afghanistan. I want to thank you, my audiences, and every listener who was listening to this Global Cell show. I'm your host, TK Kapura, and I really enjoyed these conversations this evening. So till next time, please tune in 7 p.m. first Wednesday of the month, and we can always continue conversations with different people to be interviewed from different ends of the world. We want to say goodbye in the Pashto Dari language. Please go ahead, Nasrullah, and say goodbye in Dash, Pashto, or Dari.
Khodai paman, khoda hafiz, shpa mo pakhir, shabetan bakhir.
Adios, Tonana. Goodbye. Thank you for listening.